Raised this hour, the International Criminal Court rules against South Africa, and a Georgian mother kills husband and her four children. The time is 4 p.m. I'm Yasin Kipi. Assalamu alaikum and good afternoon. The International Criminal Court has ruled that South Africa violated its agreement with the court by not arresting Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir for crimes against humanity. The court is delivering its judgment on South Africa's failure to arrest al-Bashir when he was in the country in June 2015 to attend the African Union Summit in Johannesburg. South Africa's Supreme Court has confirmed the High Court's finding that the South African government was obliged to arrest him on a warrant issued by the ICC for crimes against humanity. The judges found South Africa's defense that Bashir has immunity from arrest as head of state is without basis and against the intention and the wording of the Rome Statute. Meanwhile, the DA in Gauteng denies that it expects members to vote according to party dictates, while demanding that ANC MPs vote according to their consciences in a no-confidence debate against President Jacob Zuma. This follows the recent outing of Mogale City DA Mayor Michael Hollenstein, allegedly with the help of a DA vote. The party's John Moody explains how the matter is being handled.
If eventually it comes out and we have evidence against this individual, we are a political organization. We are there as public representatives on a party ticket. And we adhere to party rules and caucus decisions. The test here is what is in the best interest of the people. That is the test, not the test about taking action against a person because they have voted against a party caucus decision or not.
Meanwhile, Black First, Land First, or BLF, accuses journalists of not trusting the police. The movement's lawyers argued in the High Court in Johannesburg today that journalists who feel threatened should lay charges instead of running to the court. Editors Forum SANEF is applying for a further urgent interdict against BLF to prevent it from further harassing members of the media. Judge Corrie van der Westhuizen will rule on the matter tomorrow. Closer to home, Cape Town police have been deployed to the Houtby area as a group of residents took to the streets again. Violent demonstrations erupted this week when residents of the Imizamuyetu informal settlement, who have to live in structures on a sports field after a devastating fire, demanded services like electricity. The police's Noloyiso Rexwana explains.
Police are on the scene in Hout Bay dispersing a group of about 150 community members. A suspect was arrested for possession of drugs.
In international news, in Georgia, Atlanta, in the U.S., a woman was arrested this morning after police says she fatally stabbed her husband and her four young children. According to the Gwinnett County Police Department, responding officers found a man and four young children dead at a home in Loganville, a small town situated some 35 miles east of Atlanta. A fifth child was transported to a local hospital with serious injuries. A woman, whom police described as the mother, has been detained. Colonel Michael Pereira said in a press release that the specific ages of the children or a motive for the horrendous crime remains unknown. Here's a wrap-up of your top stories. The International Criminal Court rules against South Africa, and Georgian mother kills husband and her four children. That's the end of this news bulletin. I'll be back at 4:30 with the latest headlines. More stories at vocfm.co.za. For VOC News, I'm Yasin Kipi.
Love this Friday with our Freshed Up Friday offer. We've got the perfect deal to start your weekend off the right way. Buy a Red Bull 250ml and get a Bar 155 gram absolutely free. Only available this Freshed Up Friday at all Freshed Up at Caltex stores nationwide, excluding KZN. T's and C's apply. Freshed Up at Caltex.
Saturday afternoons on Voice of the Cape 91.3 FM has an all-new show. Eat, Pray, Love comes to you every Saturday at 4 p.m. with me, Taslima Ali. It's fresh, inspirational, packed with special events, international cuisine, personalities, and tunes to wind down your Saturday. So that's Eat, Pray, Love every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. live on Voice of the Cape 91.3 FM. Eat, Pray, Love with Taslima Ali.
When Allah tests you, don't say why me. Instead, say Alhamdulillah.
Let your faith be stronger than your fear.
Appreciating the little things in life through the mercy of the Almighty Allah. All here on AM Inspirations from Monday to Friday between 5 and 6:30 AM. Only on the Voice of the Cape 91.3 FM.
The Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings be upon him, said, fasting Ramadan and following it with 6 days from Shawwal is like continual fasting. Narrated by Imam Muslim on the authority of Abu Ayyub. May Allah be pleased with him. Continued obedience and renewed awareness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as a sign that one has gained benefit from the month of Ramadan. The Voice of the Cape, Shawwal, 1438.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Thursday, 91.3, Voice of the Cape, Drive Time. I'm Shafiq Morton. Assalamu alaikum. Nearly forgot my name. But coming up in today's show, alarm over the Reserve Bank proposal amid the ANC's internecine economic war, Africa Focus, and Iraq after ISIS. We've got a lot. Stay with us.
Drive Time, 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Welcome back to the show. The ANC is considering nationalizing the SA Reserve Bank, but says its independence should be guaranteed. Addressing the media on the outcome of discussions in the Economic Transformation Commission at the ANC's National Policy Conference, party head of the Economic Transformation Subcommittee, Enoch Gonongwana, said private ownership of the bank was an anomaly. However, in the lead-up to the conference, there had been a strong push to nationalize the Reserve Bank and bring it under the control of government, but some people are now saying that this is just a symbolic move. What is going on? Online is Dr. Azhar Jameen, the chief economist at Econometrics, and he joins us online to help us understand this. Dr. Azhar, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum to you and your listeners.
I'm struggling to make sense of this. I've got a statement here in which the word symbolic is now being used. It's just chaos.
What is being discussed here is nothing new. It's been on the agenda a number of times over the last decade or so, and every time the same arguments are put forward that in fact, South Africa's Reserve Bank is only one of seven central banks in the world where there is a bit of private ownership. The rest of them are all owned by governments, and yet are also mainly independent. So it's not different from, if we were to sacrifice the small private ownership of the Reserve Bank, it really wouldn't make a huge difference in terms of how the Reserve Bank were to run.
Now, there's something else that came out of the Public Protector's report, and apart from revealing that she knows very little about economics, she made the point that about the Reserve Bank's job to protect the rand, that in a sense had to be taken away. I'm also have been struggling for a very long time to understand exactly what the Public Protector was on about.
No, basically the Public Protector was just saying, stop worrying about the rand, stop worrying about inflation, and go for growth. And the danger with that is that it's a recipe for disaster in the longer term. It's basically saying, do what the Venezuelans have done, what the Zimbabweans did a decade ago, and, you know, just forget about all the other constraints, just go for growth. And that will create jobs and everyone will be happy ever after, without realizing that that's a very short-term perspective and may lead to significantly higher growth for a short period of time, but the inflation that it would let rip would impoverish the poorer sections of society so heavily that, you know, it would lead to a downward spiral in terms of social unrest and also lower economic growth.
Do you feel that the Public Protector overstepped the mark on this one?
Well, I don't see how much, you know, I really don't have looked at her CV. There's very little credentials in terms of knowledge of economics for her to make such a statement, especially given the influence and the importance of her function. It really was, I think, way over the top.
Now, looking at what came out of the ANC policy conference, which is very little, actually, and everybody focusing on this whole South African Reserve Bank thing, the word nationalization has been used. Can one
See, that was used, I think, as a sop to the populist faction at the policy conference, so that, you know, they've been critical and always say, no, we need to consider and review the Reserve Bank's role, etc. And those in the know probably said, look, how can we shut these people up? Here's an easy way of doing so. And let's use the word nationalization, and that will please them. And in that way, they will just keep quiet and feel that.
Now, looking at the Reserve Bank, just the structure of it very quickly, my limited knowledge tells me it's got 2 million issued shares and 650 private shareholders. How does this play into the Reserve Bank? It looks like we've lost our call with Dr. Azhar Jameen. We're going to call him again just as we start to get going on the whole South African Reserve Bank saga. It looks like it will not be nationalized. And of course, even if it is nationalized, some experts are saying it will still do exactly the same function, and that is to ensure that the value of the currency is stable and that the country's repo rate keeps the country's inflation target being between 3 to 6%. We're just trying to see whether we've got hold of Dr. Azhar Jameen back online again. He just disappeared into the ether. And I do believe that we are getting hold of him again, just checking through the glass. And, of course, the idea of nationalizing the Reserve Bank, it's something, it's not a new issue. It's come up quite a lot in the past, but it was certainly part of the policy conference, ANC policy conference, that concluded yesterday. We've also got somebody from the ANC saying that the idea of nationalization is, in fact, a sentimental thing. So, yeah, so we're just trying to wait and see what on earth is happening as far as that one is concerned. All right, looks like we've lost that line. We can't get hold of Dr. Azhar Jameen anymore. So we're just going to take a breather, and then we will be going into our next guest. And we will be chatting about the judgment of the ICC, the International Criminal Court, in which it has actually said that South Africa is guilty and that South Africa has actually breached its agreement with the International Court, that it has violated its agreement. The judgment was delivered earlier today, and it concerns the scenario of al-Bashir, the leader of Sudan, coming to South Africa in 2015 to attend an African Union summit in Johannesburg, and the government not arresting him when he arrived. And of course, the rest, as they say, is history. Let's quickly take a breather. We'll be back after this.
Yellow packer, full of packet. Here we go, deals in the house, prices are low.
It's ShopRite's yellow packet promotion with over 1,000 low price deals. Get a 5 or 10 piece County Fair fresh chicken bri pack for only $39.99 per kilogram. And a 1.5 kilogram tin of Rick Coffee instant coffee for a low $129.99. Offers valid until 9 July at all Western Cape stores excluding Southern Cape. ShopRite, lower prices you can trust, always.
Winter madness has gripped the Cape. At Barron's, the Volkswagen people purchased the new Golf 7 at an amazing price of 289,900 rand.
What? Well, that's the same price as a Polo,
including a 5-year, 90,000-kilometer service plan and a 3-year, 120,000-kilometer warranty.
Well, it says limited to 10 cars per dealer. I'm rushing to Barron's VW now before I miss
out. Get to your nearest Barron's VW dealer today in Coolamberg, Cape Town, Bellville, N1 City and Tukai.
Live from Cape Town, this is the Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape.
This day of fighting in the Middle East brought an increase in the Palestinian death toll. It is now an underlying peace in the Middle East.
Palestine's aspirations for you in observer state.
Well, the Palestinians insisting on full recognition.
Speaking news from the Middle East, we are approaching.
It seems that the failure of years of diplomatic talks to reach a solution to the Middle East for
many nations at best. Palestine is now a big news story.
welcome back to the show. The International Criminal Court has ruled that South Africa violated its agreement with the court by not arresting Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir for crimes against humanity. The court today delivered its judgment on South Africa's failure to arrest al-Bashir when he was in the country in June 2015 to attend the African Union Summit in Johannesburg. It ruled that al-Bashir, who was wanted by the ICC on charges of crimes against humanity, was not protected from arrest by diplomatic immunity. ICC Judge Kuno Tarfusa handed down the judgment. Online with us to give us comment is Francis Antoine, the director of the Helen Suzmond Foundation on the ICC judgment. Francis Antoine, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we've been having problems with our line all day long. As a matter of interest, I'm sure you'd agree that this ruling by the ICC was fairly predictable, wasn't it, in terms of South Africa violating its agreement?
I think it was very predictable, given that we'd had a run in South Africa with the Southern Africa Litigation Center bringing the first application in the High Court and the second application, and then subsequently the HSF, the Helen Suzmond Foundation, joined SILC in the SCA hearing. It was very predictable. The five judges in Bloemfontein, three judges on the full bench, that's a sum total of eight judges, came to the same conclusion. And it was very predictable. But what is sad, and I think it is something that one can reflect on, is that the South Africans knew in advance that they had to arrest Mr. al-Bashir when he arrived. This man has two warrants out for his arrest. He had been sought after so that he could be handed over to the ICC. And what makes this matter even worse, in some ways, compounds the problem, is that on the Thursday before Mr. al-Bashir arrived in South Africa, the South Africans approached the ICC for advice as to whether or not he should be arrested. And this only came out in the hearing at The Hague, and I was there with members from the International Commission of Jurists and also from SELF. And we were told then that, and this was unknown to us, that the judge had ruled that he has to be arrested. So for them to come this, and say this is a defense, when our own courts and the ICC, before he arrived, said he has to be arrested, is a long story. And it's doubly compounded by the fact that when we look at our own struggle against apartheid and the international campaigns that were launched, this man, al-Bashir, is implicated in the deaths of more than 400,000 people. That's a hell of a lot of people. And it's sad that South Africa has not fulfilled its obligations in terms of its international treaties.
Now, of course, I mean, we have this judgment, and South Africa doesn't look very good as a result of this judgment. But something that was occurring over the weekend at the ANC policy conference was that there was strong talk there that the ANC was going to forge ahead and break away from the ICC. It looks to me as if government has no intention of listening to the courts, which is, again, a travesty.
Well, we have enough evidence of this that the executive has simply bypassed or ignored court judgments in the past, and this is one case as well, both in the national arena and in the international arena. And are we really being ruled by a group of lawless men and women? That's the big question people should begin to ask. If the courts decide on a matter, both domestically and internationally, and the government refuses to abide by the decisions, is this not amounting to a lawlessness? And I think South Africans must consider this option very carefully. And then on the other matter, something which your listeners just may be interested, we used to have a SADC tribunal, and the South African government, along with a number of other SADC countries, simply imploded that tribunal, largely at the behest of the Zimbabwean government. And so when we come to these questions of the ICC, the FADC tribunal, and our own domestic courts, is our government behaving in a lawless mode? And I think that is something that all South Africans should be asking themselves now.
In fact, I think a lot of South Africans are in fact already actually asking these particular questions. And another question that comes to mind, and I don't know whether any of us has the answer, why on this earth would South Africa want to protect al-Bashir? I mean, what on earth do we stand to even benefit from Sudan?
There are oil revenues, perhaps. Nothing has come out from the Scorpio Amabungane thing yet. That's a cheeky reply on my part. I don't know.
Right.
Always follow the money. And if there is money here and there are treaties, let's expose those treaties. We do know that recently, in the last year or so, treaties were signed. So there's more work to be done there. What for me was a shocking revelation was in the court in The Hague when it was revealed that the South African government had approached the court. And I think it had approached it via our ambassador. And we all know who our ambassador is at The Hague. He was the VIP head who permitted the Guptas their landing claim for their wedding. And there's a part of me saying, if somebody were to write this as a fiction short story, nobody would believe it. That's who our ambassador is at The Hague.
Yes, in fact, he has a lot to answer for, doesn't he? In fact, and I've got a facetious question here. Yes. God help us if the Guptas have now got interest in the Sudan as well.
I'm not commenting on that.
Right, okay.
I could say God help us, just period.
Yeah, it really does get very, very scary. Where do you think government should actually go from here? I mean, this is a damning ruling. It's a damning indictment. We've heard a lot of hot air, I think that's all I can say, has come out of the ANC policy conference. I mean, what does government need to do now to try and get some credibility back on this whole issue of the ICC? Because some African countries appear to have reneged on breaking away, and some are still determined to break away.
Yes, I can't answer for them, but I can answer for South Africa. I can hope that South Africa will reconsider its decision to withdraw. The DA did take the matter to court in terms of the procedures. The Helen Sussman Foundation was cited as a respondent. The court was very clear there in that instance as well. The government had used the wrong procedures. We watch this carefully. In terms of redeeming itself, I would say to all those people who had gathered in Bloemfontein in Nazareth recently, ask yourselves how we conducted the liberation struggle. Ask yourselves how we have petitioned other governments on the basis of human rights violations. And there can be no worse violation than murder. And those people, those 400,000 people, appear to have been murdered. And the man who instigated so much of it was al-Bashir. Is that how we regard our own liberation in South Africa? And is that how we regard human rights in South Africa? And in that sense, I'm sounding a little bit like a preacher, forgive me, but there's a part of me saying there are some things, very little that's been done, which is as disgusting as this matter. And I think it creates a hell of a problem for us in terms of credibility. There's been talk, for example, of South Africa spearheading an initiative to change the composition of the Security Council, that there is no representative from Africa as a permanent member. Let's pursue that. But there is no way, given South Africa's illegality here, that it could hope to occupy that position, because it has really reduced itself to a set of illegalities at this point. Not to say that the other Security Council permanent members always act legally, but we would have thought, given where we came from in 94, given Mr. Mandela's own position on human rights being an important, perhaps the definitive plank in our foreign policy, we've deduced that we've forgotten where we've come from. So I think it's time to remember what we came from and what we are doing right now.
Francis Antoni, the director of the Helen Suzman Foundation, thanks for chatting to us about the ruling of the International Criminal Court saying that South Africa violated its agreement. Thanks a lot.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.